And in a moment, two very special guests tonight as we talk about demons, John Zaffis, the Reverend Andrew Calder, on Coast to Coast AM. John Zaffis has more than 30 years of experience studying and investigating the paranormal. He has had the opportunity to work for and with his aunt and the late uncle, Ed and Lorraine Warren. John has assisted and worked with well-known exorcists, who include Bishop Robert McKenna, Malachi Martin, the Reverend Young. Through the hands-on work and other investigators and clergy, he has obtained a great deal of knowledge, understanding of the paranormal world, considered one of the most foremost authorities in the field today. He's also worked extensively with both spiritualists and psychics concerning how their knowledge is used for channeling, reincarnation, the calling of spirits for information. John Zaffis tonight on Coast to Coast with us. Hey, John, how you doing? Welcome back.
I'm doing good, George. Glad to be back.
Likewise. And Andrew Calder is the founder and director of the Georgia Paranormal Research Team. He has lived in a haunted house and has experienced paranormal phenomena firsthand. He has served in law enforcement for both city and state agencies and as a private investigator specializing in video surveillance. Andrew has been a member of other paranormal investigative groups serving Middle Georgia and surrounding areas. Mr. Calder is also an ordained priest with the Communion of Evangelical Episcopal Churches. His knowledge is the areas of the occult, witchcraft, psychic abilities, tarot, and yes, Ouija boards. Hey, Andrew, how are you?
Good. How are you doing tonight, George?
Good, good. Is it accurate to call you Reverend? Should I?
Reverend or Father, either one is
okay,
appropriate.
Very good. John, tell us how you and Andrew mixed up together here.
Well, and with most people that get involved with this and they're interested in it, a key factor with dealing with me is to hound me to death. And many years back, Andy would continuously call and ask a lot of questions and was very intrigued and very interested in learning to help people. And that formed a bond with Andy and I, and he moved forward with the work and wanted to take it a step farther to be able to help them. And many years later, we work very much hand-in-hand with a lot of the investigations that we get involved with today.
Andrew, and your feelings about John?
John's been a very good friend over the years, a mentor, buddy, pal, whatever you want to call. He's been very much helpful in a lot of my cases and in a lot of my knowledge and understanding. As he said, I got started on this path and, you know, eventually went beyond just the investigator part and, you know, went on into the world of clergy, stepping over the line, so to speak, and actually doing hands-on work with helping people and so forth. But we still continue our work to this day together.
John, do you find that Andrew's spirituality has helped in your investigations?
Absolutely. And these are key things, George, that you look for when you're a demonologist and you're in this part of the work that we are in. Andy, the forefront with him is his concern for people and children. And that's what I look for when I deal with clergy, when they're trying to reach out and be able to help people on a spiritual problem.
Well, and that is important. What we'll do tonight, just free-flowing, John and Andrew, so just jump in at any time,
sure.
And we'll just do this as a discussion. John, we lost Ed Warren several months ago, as you know. We had that chance to talk with you about this. In the paranormal field, I mean, are there, you know, you stand out there. Are there any other people out there that have the experience and the exposure to this? Because that seems to be a dying field as well.
With the knowledge base that my uncle had, it was so much of hands-on and reading and intermingling with so many of the different clergy members and different faiths that he was able to bring things forth. He was an extremely gruff man. He was very down to earth, and he told you like it was. And with that knowledge base and being able to be around him in such unique circumstances and, you know, getting a quick telephone call, George, come on, we're going to do an investigation. You didn't know if you'd be gone for hours or if you'd be gone to the following day.
Exactly, yeah.
And with that, I always had that opportunity to be in the car with him, and he would always drill you, throw questions at you, and tell you if you were right or if you were wrong. And it was so many things that I reflect upon now. I'll say, what would my uncle say? What would my uncle do? And I reflect upon all that. And during the course of all those years, George, little did I know, little did I understand it at that point, that that exposure and those things he exposed me to would help me down the road and would be able to reflect upon some of that information. Today, it's a lost art in the field of what he did. It was the nitty-gritty. It was getting in there, pulling and prodding and trying to find out, why is this person going through this? What is happening? What are the elements? That this is something with our investigations today, a lot of people aren't looking for or have an understanding of how to go about that. There's so much more than just going in and getting psychic photography or EVPs or temperature changes. There's so much more.
Well, and you know, John, you're right, because what I'm beginning to sense is that a lot of younger people who get into the field aren't doing it like Ed did or Lorraine did or you did. They're getting into it because of the glitz of the technology.
And this is a very big issue, and I deal with so many of the groups. Andy also does too. You know, they'll contact me, and we'll go back and forth, and they'll go, John, we didn't get any pictures or EVPs. I don't think it's haunted. I don't think they have an issue going on. And I go as far as I can as explaining to them, you can't always judge it just by walking away with this, you know, information, EVPs and psychic photography or the temperature changes. There's so much more. And a lot of times these elements, if you will hide behind the scenes, and you're not going to get that data. But that doesn't mean that these people aren't going through some type of a paranormal problem.
Remember the movie Poltergeist, Tangina, who was played by Zelda Rubinstein? I was having lunch yesterday with my producer, Tom, and a waitress looked just like her. And I thought for a moment, being out in Los Angeles, it might be her. And, I mean, we both did a bolt back. This lady was identical. John, do you come across people like that character, who actually try to communicate with spirits like that and try to help them?
Absolutely. Do I work with mediums and psychics and people that are in that? George, I have three people in my organization. I've worked with them for the past 25 years, and their key element is to help. They're not interested in any hype or publicity or shows or anything. They still come in, they evaluate, they give us the information that they perceive, what they're picking up on. And we incorporate that information with all the young techie kids that I got in the group, which is a phenomenal thing. And when they can document something from a scientific approach on what these gifted people had picked up on, what a phenomenal thing, George, to bring both worlds together.
Andrew, let's bring you back into the conversation here through your background. Do you consider yourself an exorcist by any chance?
I do. I do perform exorcisms, but as while John was talking, you know, the first thing I remember is I came into this work as a paranormal investigator. That was my first job.
Because you've got that background in law enforcement, right?
Right. Okay. I came in first as a paranormal investigator, and I give a lot of credit to that because I learned how to do that from more of the analytical, scientific side, so to speak, to begin with first. And then I eventually found my faith and stepped over into the clergy realm. So I know how to do both jobs in that arena. So I don't, you know, rely on one methodology to bring about results or find results, so to speak.
Why is it that when an exorcism is performed, it's always a clergyman member who needs to be there, whether it's a Roman Catholic priest, Episcopal priest, or a priest in general? Why is it a religious person that has to be there?
Well, technically, the more pious the person you have, the better off you're going to be. just average Joe Blow out there on the street that has little or no spiritual foundation about them is going to get their proverbial rear end handed to them by these demonic forces that people are dealing with. So that's why they prefer someone of a clergy.
Okay, but what if someone who isn't a clergy member but has incredible spirituality, you know, goes to church, let's say, every day, every Sunday, understands spirituality, can that person be trained to be an exorcist?
I wouldn't say they could be trained to be an exorcist. Now, they can do deliverance-type help work with people, calling upon the mercy of God to help these type people and so forth. But you have to understand that there is certain protection by being ordained priest, clergy, and so forth. There's apostolic succession where, from the time of Christ, the anointing has been passed down. So there is certain protection for the clergy in being, you know, ordained priest, clergy, and so forth, if that makes any sense to you.
But even with that kind of experience, An exorcist can be in trouble. It can go awry, can it?
Sure. Sure. You know, we definitely have to be on our guard 24/7. We can't take anything for granted. We can't let our guard down. Even we as clergy can suffer repercussions off of working cases, doing exorcisms and so forth. And this is something I suffered quite a bit in my early years of working with these people.
You both worked on this Mary exorcism case, right?
Right.
Tell us a little bit about it, both you and John. Tell us what happened.
I originally got the case, I don't remember what year it was now, but this young lady was a paranormal investigator, which also had some latent psychic abilities. And in her early years, childhood and so forth, she had been exposed to a lot of the paranormal stuff through her family, doing things like seances and different things of this nature. And I worked with her for probably about a year, until it got to the point that the phenomenon was getting so bad and so malevolent that I knew from 1,500, 2,000 miles away, there was not much more I could do for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at that point that, you know, I called John up. I said, John, I said, listen, you need to set up an exorcism for this girl because, you know, she's beyond just, you know, just normal counseling and help.
What was happening to her, Andy?
Well, in the beginning, she talked a lot about voices. She talked about seeing things, hearing things in the house. It progressed to the point where she was taken over by entities. She spoke of where, you know, she became demonically strong and even overpowered her 6-foot whatever boyfriend.
Okay.
And, you know, there was even a point where she was doing horrible things like smearing excrement all over herself.
Oh, my.
And, you know, it was just getting to a point where even she and us together could not do much, and she had to have a full-fledged exorcism.
Okay, and before the exorcism takes place, do you try to get her into some psychiatric counseling or to see a doctor or anything like that?
Well, we definitely try to determine to make sure there is no psychiatric issues with that person. You know, no paranoid schizophrenia, bipolarism, anything like
right.
that.
Whether she's on any kind of medication
exactly.
or drugs, things
any
like that.
Medical conditions that contribute to this, anything of that nature, we try to rule out.
Once you rule it out, then you feel as if you have someone who's possessed.
Well, yeah, there's certain things, you know, within the realm that you can attribute to psychological conditions, just like levitation. I'm sorry, there ain't no psychiatric condition in the world that's going to cause levitation. But yes, we do try to rule out every feasible thing within the realm that could be caused by physiological or psychological conditions.
Okay, so you go to John and say, look, we got a problem with this girl.
Right.
What does John do?
Okay, at this point, too, George, I think it's important to also mention that Mary has a sister that's a psychologist.
Okay.
And she was intervening, and she was going back and forth. Now, I was aware of the situations. Andy was filling me in on some of the things that were occurring because Mary and her group and her sister were actually embarrassed to contact me at that point in time.
Right.
Because she did not feel that, you know, I was going to say, you know, look what you did and what you, you know, fell into. But that wasn't the point at all. I was concerned and I wanted to get her help as soon as we possibly can. So I was going back and forth with her sister. She was evaluating her from her perspective. So many things weren't falling into the category. Everything was going outside the range of it. So then I started talking to Mary going back and forth, And it took a tremendous amount of convincing of Mary that she definitely needed an exorcism performed. Little was I aware on how strong of a grip and what torment to the point that she was going through. So when, you know, everything got arranged and everything, we had several people involved with this exorcism. And it had such a grip and such a hold on this young lady that she was aware of it. When I went to pick them up from the train station, she had that look on her face like, is all she wanted to do was kill me. And we proceeded, and we got everything arranged, and it was a several-hour exorcism that was performed over her. And it was the first time in 35 years that I've ever actually seen a levitation. She actually levitated up out of the chair about a foot, and it took five of us to push her back down into the chair to hold her down.
My God. And everybody's witnessing this.
Everybody in that room actually witnessed this. And the funniest part is, if there is to it, is that I was behind her and I kept pushing her down. And everybody said to me after the exorcism was completed and everything, John, you know, she levitated. And I kept going, yeah. I looked at the footage afterwards. I had to look at it, George, 15 times before I was convinced that that young lady actually levitated. And I called up and I said to everybody, you're absolutely right. Because when I'm involved with this and I get into it to the point where my prayer and my belief system is very strong, and that's what I do when I assist these things, is that I go into a very deep prayer mode. And a lot of times I just don't pay attention to what is happening around me.
So when you were pushing her back down, could you feel force when you were trying to do that?
When I looked at the video, you can see me actually struggling to push her back down.
But you didn't feel that when you were there.
I did not feel it. And like I said, when I kept getting told, I was just like, yeah. But then when I viewed the footage, I was actually amazed by it.
Did she shapeshift at all in front of both of you, where you could see her go from being a normal person to this demon and then back and forth?
I have definitely witnessed it with her. And when the transformation took place, I knew. There was no doubt in my mind. Her characteristics changed about her, her demeanor. She had that look like if anybody was anywhere near her, she would go right towards them, and she got that very glassy-eyed look. So I knew at that point in time we were going to have a major issue when I seen it occurring in the back seat of my car, because I was looking at her in the rearview mirror, and she didn't even realize that I was paying attention to her at that point in time.
Weren't you concerned, though, she could jump at you from the back seat?
I was extremely concerned, but there were two women that were sitting on either side of her in the car.
She wasn't straitjacket down or handcuffed or anything like that, though, was she?
No, not whatsoever.
Okay.
Not whatsoever.
I bet those two women would have had a difficult time holding her down, John, if something had happened.
Well, I'll tell you what, they're pretty big-built women, and I wasn't too concerned. I knew that we were going to have the struggles, and when we had arrived, it took all that it could for all three of us to actually get her to go in. She didn't even want to go in. She was fighting and resisting and just thrashing about trying to enter to actually get the exorcism performed.
All right. Well, you tell us when we come back what happened during the exorcism. We're talking with Father Andrew Calder, John Zaffis. Their websites are linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. We'll finish up the story about Mary and that exorcism. Then we'll get into some other areas here of demonology, negativity. How can we be positive and fight this off? We'll be back in a moment. Well, they're reporting that that small tunnel has been drilled through there in the search for those miners in Utah, and they're putting a microphone down into the hole now, and also, of course, it's going to put in some oxygen. No contact yet, though. No contact yet. I'll still monitor that story for you tonight. We'll be back in a moment with John Zaffis and the Reverend Andrew Calder on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, John and Andrew, let's pick up the exorcism of Mary here. Tell us what happens from the car ride, John.
Well, we finally coax her, get her in, and get her in the chair and everything, and everything's set up, and the priest starts to perform the rituals and the prayers. And I'd say about 20 minutes into it is when Mary went totally under. And she was just lashing out. She gained an enormous amount of strength, extremely foul, foul language. She was spitting at people, biting people. And it escalated where her very close friend, her girlfriend, had traveled with her. She was retaliating against her girlfriend and kept saying, "Join us, come with us." And her girlfriend was totally beside herself and was breaking down at some of the different things that this demon was lashing out and saying.
Was there a big voice change?
Yes, there was. It got extremely deep.
Okay.
And it just was very piercing at that point in time. And this continued on and off for at least 2 hours. Then we reached a point where finally he commanded the name of one of the demons to come forth, and we were able to get it up, get it out of her, and we looked up to see which one it was. At that point in time, we were able to get that information, give that to the priest, and he was able to complete the exorcism. And just about at that point in time, when he was going at it with the name of the demon, is when she actually came up, she levitated. And one of the women that was with us is gifted, and she had looked up towards the back, and three of us had seen this black shadow form that was behind her. And it had gone right through the wall, right out the back of the building, and he completed everything, and she totally collapsed into the chair and then basically went onto the floor into the fetal position, and she was crying. So at that point, we knew what was with her. He was actually able to break it and get it to go back to the depths of hell, if you will.
My gosh. Is this one of the worst you've ever been a part of, John?
It was way up there on the list, George.
Andrew?
Yes, I would have to say it's one of the most intense and complicated ones I've ever been involved with.
Have you ever seen anybody almost killed in one of these, either the person who's being exorcised or somebody in that room?
I've seen a couple of them. It's very rare that you will have that type of activity take place. But I've had a couple of situations where I've actually, one of them was most recent, where I actually got pushed and went back about 2 or 3 feet. And I've had another situation where, unfortunately, the positioning I was holding the person, they just got me right in between the legs, and I was a hurting camper for almost 2 weeks. So it can get close. I mean, bitten, scratched, very close with those types of situations. So, but to see where I've seen these types of occurrences take place, yes. Fortunately, and I say very fortunately to this date, I haven't been involved with a situation where a person has been physically to a point where it's been totally outlandish, mentally or spiritually. Yeah, I've seen people totally destroyed and actually get out of doing the demonology end of this work because it just totally destroyed them.
Andrew, does Hollywood blow this out of proportion, or is it pretty accurate?
Well, I would have to say, of course, Hollywood hypes up everything. But from what you see, just like giving an example here, The Exorcist and so forth, I would say probably everything in that movie is possible to happen except for the head turning around. That's physically impossible.
What about the slime coming out of their mouths?
Well, some form of that, yes. You know, bile, you know, liquid,
yeah.
Stuff
yeah.
Like that.
Okay.
That is impossible.
Okay. John, tell us a little bit about your work with Malachi Martin, a true giant in his time.
He was, you know, I knew him. I had an opportunity to work on two investigations in Connecticut for him. When he would sit in and talk to you and go into the stories and the different things that
he was involved with in his career, it was outstanding to listen to him. You knew what he was talking about. He was talking from the heart, and he was talking about the different things that he was involved with. The one story to this day that still intrigues me, the very last time, I think there was like 20 of us that were with him, he started talking about this exorcism that he was involved with in a hut out in Africa. And it was this most horrendous case, and he went into in-depth, started going into it, and then all of a sudden, he just stopped, and he changed the whole subject and left you hanging with this story. And we were intrigued, and we were trying to figure out why he did what he did. And later on, when we were all standing there having coffee and everything, I turned and looked at him. I said, Malachi, why didn't you finish the story? He said, John, I was giving you too much recognition. And he said, and I didn't want to go there. And that was the end of it. I never ever really got that full story out of him, exactly what did transpire there.
I know when he died, we lost a giant there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Phenomenal knowledge base, exposure to this whole end of the work.
Truth.
Yes. I mean, as many times as I had talked to him on the phone in different things, the man was very sincere, and he always told me like it was. And he would just tell me what he felt was correct and what was incorrect. Because the two cases that he gave me and I worked on, I had no clue. He just gave me a little bit of information. And when I talked to him, naturally, I was so nervous. I was like, what do I say to him? What do I tell him? And I said to him what I actually felt. I told him, I says, one of these cases, I feel this person really genuinely needs the help. And I said, to be honest with you, the other case, I really don't feel that there's any paranormal activity. He started chuckling. And I said, well, Malachi, why are you laughing? He goes, I just tested you. So I took that as a learning process from him because he wanted to see. He already knew. He knew the evaluations of both cases, but he wanted to see how I was going to handle them and what I was going to come back with and tell him.
Andrew, why do you do what you do?
Very good question there, George. Over the years of being a paranormal investigator, you know, I, of course, got what I term mom-and-pop ghost-type hauntings, you know, normal everyday-type hauntings.
Right.
Over a period of time, I got more and more and more of these negative-type hauntings. And, you know, trying to work with clergy of their faith or trying to find somebody in their area that could even think about helping them, because a good many clergy out there don't even believe in this stuff, let alone know how to deal with it. So, you know, I started my walk with my faith and eventually got saved, and I eventually got ordained and got involved because I mostly wanted to help the people. When you hear families that are being tormented, the families can't sleep because they're being tormented all night, children are crying because of dark shapes or, you know, horrible apparitions are appearing, you know, scratching them, biting them, choking them. Women are being accosted or even, you know, heaven forbid, even raped. These type things. You know, your heart goes out to these people. And my main goal was to try to help them as best I could. And then I eventually got ordained, and that was always been my goal, is always to try to legitimately help them, not make things worse.
Is this more fulfilling for you than some of your other occupations?
Yes, I would have to say so, because I legitimately get to help people, and there's an immediate response. You get to see the outcome of your work right away. You get to see, you know, God's work. It's not like you say a prayer right now, and then maybe it happens 6 months down the road or whatever. You never get to see it manifest. You get to see God's work immediately.
You mentioned more and more negative cases are coming up.
Right.
Between what you see, John, and you, Andrew, why are we getting these negative cases? What happened to, you know, the positive ability of people, the ability to fight this themselves, to battle it? What's happening?
Well, one of the things is I don't think people have really known how to fight this themselves to begin with. Clergy is doing a great in-service because when you go to church every Sunday, do they teach you how to fight the demonic?
Nope, they never did.
Exactly, and they never do. So they're doing a great in-service to their people by not covering this. They cover everything else in the Bible, but today's world, things is at an all-time high with New Age religions, alternative religions, you know, Santeria, Satanism, Voodoo, whatever you want to call it or get into. People are looking at alternative religions, you know, away from God or the Christian God. They're looking for immediate gratification. They're not willing to wait and work for things in their life. They want it right here, right now. So they're looking at all these little glitzy things that say, like, you can have it now, you can have it here.
Well, is there a difference, though, Andrew, between negativity or evil?
Yeah, they can be negative human spirits. But, you know, true evil is going to be demonic. It's going to be inhuman. It's never been in human form.
Because someone, you know, voodoo, is, by and large, let's say, is not an evil religion. They just believe in a different form of believing in God. It was mainstream media in Hollywood that once again took voodoo out of proportion.
Well, unfortunately, there is a negative side to voodoo. There is some of their lowers or gods that is very negative and very evil. You know, it's about like, you know, Christians can curse people through their prayers.
And they have.
And they have. And, you know, voodoo's no different. You know, they have their good and their bad, their yin and their yang. So, you know, I wouldn't say they're totally benign on that.
How about you, John? This negativity, this negative energy that seems to be permeating all over the place. What's up here?
A lot of it's transpiring from the amount of exposure. People are very intrigued, George. We're all looking for the answers. The bottom line is people want to know what in the world happens to this energy or our soul or our spirit after it leaves the physical body. So people today are more curious, and they're opening up more doors. And a lot of them are going about it in ways they can do it very innocently, but they end up getting themselves in some major trouble trying to go down that path of understanding what the whole paranormal realm is about. So in the perspectives of that, people get wrapped up in not understanding that do these negative situations in fact exist? Here again, people necessarily do not believe that there's, you know, anything out there that is on a demonic level or anything that exists like that. And these particular things, deities, have been around for thousands of years. And all these things do exist. And many times people tell me, John, I would have never gotten involved with this if I thought it was for real. So today we're seeing an escalation that I've never seen to the point that it is today. I mean, Andy and I were just having a conversation recently, several days back, and I said, Andy, if I get one more negative case in, I said, I don't know what I'm going to do because I can't even keep up with them.
Well, and it's going to affect you eventually, John, won't it? As strong as you might be emotionally,
it takes its toll, George.
Yes, it does.
I will say that, physically and mentally, because, you know, Andy, myself, a lot of us in the field, we get involved with cases worldwide.
Right.
And one of the key factors is you try to reach out and get them help in the area they're in. So not only are you dealing with the person that has the problem, you're trying to get an investigator involved or the clergy involved, or here again, if they're working with doctors or anything like that, it's important for me to be able to speak to them. So getting involved with some of these cases to try and figure out exactly what's happening and is it legit, it does take a lot of time up. I'll spend 8-9 hours a day now on the telephone in between doing emails and everything just trying to help people out or try and find them help in their location.
Do you find that during these periods of intense, and I mean intense negativity, that it's prelude to some huge calamity that could occur and somehow it picks this up?
Do you know there are several studies that are being done as we speak where they're finding a parallel with major events that take place around the world, and shortly after that, it seems that the negativity increases tenfold.
Can I interject for a second, George?
Sure.
Talking upon that basis right there, me and John, just a few years ago when 9/11 happened.
Yes.
We, during the time right after 9/11 happened, got very few, if any, cases in for a period of time, and we could not figure out what was going on. And what I came to the conclusion was that there were people from all around the world praying for the people, you know, what had happened with 9/11, more so than ever probably in the, you know, past known history.
I think so.
So the demonic world was affected on a monumental level. Eventually it returned back to normal, but during that time, wouldn't you say, John, that it was really almost at a standstill?
Absolutely. We were all amazed at it. I think so many of us, including clergy, because we've even had discussions, you know, in depth with priests and different things that I've worked with, and everybody said the same thing. It was like for, you know, a couple of months after 9/11, it was just like the whole paranormal, the hauntings, and everything came to like a standstill. And all of us were just taken back because none of us could quite understand what was happening. And I think the worst thing was, and Andy, you and I have even talked about that, we were petrified that there was going to be this huge monumental explosion with cases.
Right.
And, but I mean, fortunately, it didn't go that way. But shortly after that, I'd say like 3 to 4 months after that, investigations started coming in, and they were a lot more horrific than they were prior to that.
Well, I got to tell you, there is something afoot here. I can feel it. You can feel it. Andrew, you can feel it with this incredible negativity. I get it now every day from people saying, please keep doing more positive shows. We need it now. Something's happening, John Zaffis.
Well, George, I've recently was involved with a worldwide conference and experiencing the uniting of different belief systems, different people involved within our field. I think the consensus is that many people from many religions are realizing that there's something that we're all preparing for. We all have this underlying feeling we don't know what to expect next. And it's just that everything is amplified. And for the first time I've seen in 35 years being involved with this work, where I've seen a lot of different clergy unite.
Exactly.
And it was one of the most beautifulest things I ever witnessed, that I was ever involved with. And the one statement that I did make at this convention was, I stood right up and I said, this is one time I can stand here and say, I wish my uncle was here, because he would never believe this ever happened.
Well, I think you may be right. How's Lorraine doing, by the way?
She's doing very good. She's still lecturing, and she's still investigating, and she's doing quite well.
All right, well, when we come back, both of you, we're going to get into this demonology work of both of you. And also, when it's phone call time, I think people are going to share some of their stories with you. John, what's new with you? What are you doing?
Well, at this point in time, doing a lot of lecturing, doing conventions, working on a third book, and getting involved with hopefully getting a couple of TV shows off the ground, I'm hoping.
all right. How about you, Andrew?
Well, I'm working a lot of cases right now, doing a lot of radio interviews as well. Possibly a TV episode coming up in the near future as well, so there's a lot of things on the burner right now.
In conjunction with John or separately?
Well, that remains to be seen. I'm not sure yet.
All right.
You never know, George.
You can't tell us. All right, stick around. We'll be back with both of you. Then the last hour, we will open up the phone lines. You can share some of your stories, or maybe you need some help and advice. That'll be the last hour. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast. Stay in.